If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
You are listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by Michael.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode. We'll probably cover a little bit of the Baylor game this week, but try to stick with the Iowa State preview as much as we can.
I mean, if we're to take the advice of David Smoke, that we have a game this weekend, so let's stop talking about last weekend.
Right, and we've got to take responsibility for what happened on the field somehow.
Because I was a part of that.
I actually threw the flag
or didn't throw the flag
right
on the holding in the end zone, which would have been a safety.
Yeah, no big deal. But
or called Denzel Mims out of bounds, which he was. Or the throw to TJ Vasher is incomplete.
Which,
or the throw,
I think it was
to the sideline as intentional grounding, as it was originally called, because that was probably the closest thing to being a legitimate call, and they called it back.
Yeah,
they said, no, it wasn't. It's like,
I thought, okay. Oh my gosh, I can't believe Duffy did that. There's no one over there. Threw it from the. Anyway, we're kind of going a little bit too fast. Before we get to our official football segment, if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, give us a follow at 23personnel. Or you can follow Spencer at Punts Suck, or you can follow me at Michael_LBK. And I'm thinking with that, you want to just roll into some football?
Let's talk about some football.
He is back to pass pressure immediately, kind of flings it up there. He's stopped up and he's got an intercepted. Missed it from 19 yards.
Welker takes it at the 11. He's going to try to get to the right sideline, breaks the tackle. He's got running room at the 30, the 35, 40. He's the midfield, the 45, 40. He may go. 25, 10. Touchdown, Red Raiders.
Davis Webb, the freshman, screen. Underneath, Derek Moore breaks the tackle, still running. Up the sideline, turns on the juice. Touchdown.
So Harrell in the shotgun. From the 28, the throw goes to the right side for Crabtree. It's caught.
He breaks. He's the worst.
Touchdown, Red Raider. Unbelievable.
Touchdown,
Red Raiders. Michael Crabtree has done it.
Let the scoring begin.
So I think, let's go back to Baylor for a second.
Okay, because we got a little bit of cleanup to do.
I can't remember if this came out yesterday or if it came out Sunday, but the Big 12 or Kirby Hocut indicated that the Big 12 admitted that the illegal snap call was the wrong call. It should have been called a fumble.
Yeah, it was on Sunday.
Does that help? No, it actually hurts. It confirms our suspicions that some Big 12 officials are just straight trash. head coach Matt Wells also submitted a play, the second play of the Baylor drive, the last Baylor drive in regulation, and said, was that a hold? As of yesterday's press conference, he said he hadn't heard back yet. And there was an article that I read that said the Big 12's co-leader of officiating, whatever his name was, Bruta, I don't know, said that the Big 12 will not make any public comments on these kind of things. It's inappropriate for coaches or schools to make comments about it. But that we probably wouldn't hear the end, like the final say on whether or not that second play on Baylor's last drive where Eli Howard was held, if that was right. Actually a holding call, because it occurred in the end zone had it been called a hold, you know, just a few feet from the head official, the white hat, would have been a safety against Baylor. 2 points for Texas Tech, and Texas Tech would have gotten possession back of the ball with about a minute-ish left on the clock.
Yeah.
Up by five.
Well, so was he basically saying that what Hocutt said, or Hocutt should not have made any sort of public announcement?
Kind of.
Was he kind of admonishing him after the fact for doing that?
Yeah, but he didn't say that specifically.
Sure.
He just said that the Big 12 doesn't comment on this and won't comment on it publicly.
Yeah.
And it's advised its member institutions to do the same.
Yeah, it doesn't help the scheme of things, obviously. And really the one that everyone's hung up on is the quote-unquote illegal snap, because that was just completely an outright fabrication. I'm not even sure what you see there that makes you think that was an illegal snap. But...
The weird thing is it came from a guy that had no vision of the play.
No, he was on the sideline.
So the two guys that would have seen movement or not movement, well, three really, if you consider the guy in the middle of the field and the defense, although he probably didn't have a good angle on it. You got two guys behind the offensive line of scrimmage, the offensive line looking forward. Neither of them said anything. And I'd have to go back and listen to the play. A lot of Tech fans are saying that the whistle and or flag didn't come out until after Texas Tech had recovered the ball.
I'm fairly certain that the flag didn't, but I'm not sure about the whistle.
There was a Baylor fan that said, obviously you haven't watched the game with sound on, because the whistle was almost immediate.
Well, I can't argue that.
Recovery,
so I can't argue that, because that very well could be it. I don't remember that.
All the videos I've seen are people taking video of their TV, and they have like their own commentary running over it. Anyway, there's lots of salty Baylor fans all talking about how great Charlie Brewer is. It's like, great quarterback doesn't throw three interceptions in a game.
Yeah, three. I mean,
a great quarterback doesn't need to, like, he doesn't have to lead a game tying drive against a 3-2 Texas Tech at home as a ranked team. And back to his interceptions, it's not like they were tipped passes that just kind of got lucky. Like, a couple of them he threw into the defense.
Oh, yeah, especially like the one in the end zone. They just threw right at us.
The one to Rambo, the first one, never even saw him. Like, and Rambo's a big dude. He's like 6'5". And then the third one in the end zone, it was like, that was just a, like, he forced that throw. The dude was double covered. Mm-hmm. He forced the throw and just like, well, there's two Tech guys. And
didn't throw it high. I don't even know what the plan was there. If he was trying to put it to where only his receiver could get it, it was going to have to physically go through at least two of our DBs.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm just saying, like, Charlie Brewer is not a great quarterback.
And we'll see how good Baylor is down the road, because it...
Well,
I haven't been super impressed.
If you
so
listen
far.
To the solid verbal, Ty Hillebrand said, after
if you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know, with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know, kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
After a 6-0 start, we'll know what they are in about 6 weeks.
Yeah, I did catch that. I listened to that on the way home from work today.
Well, so I tweeted that, and he actually responded. He said, I get the joke, but their schedule like really ramps up here. I was like,
well, and he's right.
No, I get it. There's teams 3 through 8 in the Big 12, fairly nebulous. Like, it go, Baylor's probably gonna get the benefit of the doubt as being 6-0 to be number 3. They may leapfrog Texas at some point, although I don't think like they pass the same eye test. I think visually you're still gonna say Baylor's probably the third best team, despite them having a better record than Texas.
And we'll see what they do this weekend against Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State's coming off a bye week after getting beat in Lubbock that they didn't see coming. Nobody saw coming. I think they're going to be ready to play for sure. And Baylor, they kind of remind me of 2013 Texas Tech. Started off, Tech started off 7-0 that year. Kingsbury's first year, everybody was riding really high, and then the meat of the schedule hit. And that was that.
Yeah. And it's just, again, one of those things where, like, because nobody's really sure of who anybody is except for Oklahoma, Texas, and Kansas.
Oklahoma, oh my gosh.
Like, it's weird to say week 8, like, I really don't know who Texas Tech is, or I really don't know who Iowa State is, or Kansas State, or TCU, although I think we're pretty set on them struggling mightily on offense. Not sure how bad West Virginia is, because they've shown flashes of being pretty good. Does Texas Tech figure it out and have a winning record the last 6 games? Can they go 5-1?
Yeah. I mean, they have a chance. It's it's realistic. It's realistic now. Even 3 weeks ago, well, 2 weeks ago, I wouldn't have thought that.
No.
I wouldn't have thought that at this point you'd be saying, well, 5-1 is realistic. 4-2 is maybe not expected, but kind of what you would, it's kind of expected. That's the word. And speaking of West Virginia, I kind of wanted to jump into this Iowa State deal a little bit. They're 4-2 on the year, 2-1 in Big 12 play. Their wins are against Northern Iowa, barely, in triple overtime. They beat University of Louisiana Monroe 72-20, so that doesn't count. They beat TCU 49-24, which I think is their best win. Then they just this last week beat West Virginia 38-14. But before I get to that, they did lose to Iowa in week 2, 18-17 at home, and then they lost at Baylor 23-21. And I believe that was after they were down 20-0.
Mm-hmm.
And they came back and just about won it. But the West Virginia game, talking about who is very good, who's not, we're not really sure yet. They went to West Virginia came to Ames and ended up playing their backup quarterback after the first series. So Kendall went down in the first series with a pretty rough hit, and he didn't return and was replaced by a backup, Jack Allison. So even with that in mind, you think, okay, well, this was in Morgantown. I'm sorry, guys. You think, all right, well, if Iowa State's pretty good, they're going to just take care of the Mountaineers. And, you know, a score of 38-14, final score, sounds like that's what they did, but it was tied at halftime. Iowa State didn't score in the first quarter. So it was 14 all at halftime. They only scored 7 in the third. So heading into the fourth quarter against what some people think is the worst team this side of Kansas in the Big 12, they were ahead 21-14 going into the fourth quarter against a backup quarterback who got thrown in the first series. So I'm not really sure who the heck Iowa State is either.
No, and we were talking about that, Brock Purdy being their leading rusher.
Up until last week,
he dropped down to third, and they may have found the running back they want to go with, Breece Hall.
Yeah, true freshman.
Of his 216 yards on the season, 130 of them came last week. Johnny Lang is the second runner behind him, 43 carries for 193 yards. So their rushing attack, I think I heard that they went with at least four different ball carriers this past week, but it seems like they probably found their guy in Breece Hall. Brock Purdy still going to be rushing it a little bit.
Yeah, he has 51 attempts on the year, 188 yards.
For 3.7 yards per carry, so not great.
No, not great. But he does end up he having does have to a move 40, around with it a lot.
He does have a 44-yard gain.
And, you know, at first I was looking at Purdy's stats and thought, oh, he's only thrown for 11 touchdowns? Well, that's pretty pedestrian. And then guess what? Your Texas Tech Red Raiders have only thrown for 11 touchdowns. Bowman has 6 and Duffy has 5. For some reason, that seemed like a really low number to me. And maybe it is. I kind of think it is a low number.
Also, when you think about that, they've had a game where they've scored 70 points. Texas Tech hasn't done that.
Oh, no.
They had nearly 70 scored on them.
Right.
So that feels a bit low. Breece Hall, 3 touchdowns. The running back, rushing touchdowns, Johnny Long. Lang, 3 rushing touchdowns. Brock Purdy, 6 rushing touchdowns.
Yeah.
They have 14 rushing touchdowns in the year to the 13 passing, which includes Deshaunte Jones throwing a touchdown as a wide receiver and Rial Mitchell, who's thrown a touchdown. His one completion on the year is a touchdown.
Well, he's kind of like...
He's like a backup.
Oh, okay.
But he's only thrown 2 attempts. So Brock Purdy's taken every snap outside of 3.
Man, even in that 72... Well, maybe they handed off the ball. Maybe they handed off.
That's true.
In that Louisiana Monroe game.
Of the 205 pass attempts on the season, Brock Purdy has 201. Which doesn't add up to 205, but
going
off what the ESPN stats say.
Right, that's all we've got.
There's one more attempt missing somewhere.
There is. And you know, Deshaunte Jones, as you mentioned, he's their top guy, 37 receptions. But he's only hauled in 1 touchdown. Tariq Milton.
He's thrown 1 for 51 yards.
Yes. Tariq Milton, he has 19 receptions, 2 touchdowns. Both of those are wide receivers. LaMichael Petway, wide receiver, 21 receptions, 254 touchdowns, 254 yards, 3 touchdowns. But so maybe he gets, you know, looked at more in the red zone. And then Charlie Kohler, their tight end, who could kind of wreak some havoc across the middle against our guys. He has 23 receptions, 319 yards, 2 TDs, and someone that's just really seems to have been used quite a bit in this offense. He's a big guy too, 6'6", 252.
He's out of Norman.
Yeah, it's Oklahoma boy. And he, you know, whoever ends up having to tackle him is going to have their work cut out for him because he will be a part of this offense. But I'm just not super offensively. I know Purdy's a talented guy. He doesn't have, like we've talked about several times, he doesn't have the same, doesn't have a Montgomery there, but maybe they found their guy with Hall now. Who knows? It was just one game. You kind of hate to take too much off of that. But he doesn't have Jakeem Butler. He doesn't have...
Hakeem Butler,
sorry.
I was like, we said Jakeem. I was like, Jakeem Grant?
Nope, my bad. He doesn't have Hakeem Butler, and those guys have really kind of limited this offense some, adjusting to those, filling those holes. But he is a talented guy. He's very mobile. Tech has managed mobile quarterbacks this year somehow for the most part. And I would even throw Brewer in as one of those because he can move around and get outside the pocket. But he wasn't getting by Brooks very easily on Saturday.
Brooks, I mean, my goodness, that dude flies. He's everywhere.
Yes.
And if it's not him... Like, if he's not the first guy there, then it's Rico Jeffers, and Brooks is like a step behind him.
Sure.
And then Douglas Coleman.
Yes.
or whoever's playing the Raider safety position. Because when it was Thomas Leggett, it was like Brooks 1A, Thomas Leggett 1B.
So I think offensively they're no joke, but... I think this is a good matchup for Texas Tech.
They're fairly balanced.
Sure.
There's not anybody offensively that you say, holy crap, we have to contain him. Otherwise he's going to like, he can beat us. I mean, outside of like looking at Brock Purdy, like,
yeah,
but if you say you need to contain a quarterback, that's like, well, okay, the offense runs to the quarterback, right?
Sure.
I mean, for the vast
goal
majority
number
of teams,
one every
like,
week,
except for maybe like Wisconsin, like, okay, we have to stop Jonathan Taylor, but that's one, unrealistic. Two, it's Brock Purdy. Like, it's not like you're talking about Jalen Hurts. And even then, Jalen Hurts has a ridiculous amount of talent around him.
Right.
I don't know what the game plan would be, except you rely on your front five, six, whatever you have up there to force their running to go horizontal. Because there's not like a super talented guy that you're worried about, like that scares you. And your front, especially your defensive line, has been really disruptive the past few weeks. They've done a really good job of containing skill players, especially early on in the game. And then you just let your back, you let Douglas Coleman back there play center field and says, I dare you to throw it.
Yeah.
Because Coleman's going to come away with a pick or two.
You never know.
Because this is what he does. You know, leads the country in interceptions. Sorry, I'm looking for the line.
Oh, it's Iowa State's favorite at -7. Is that the line you're looking for?
A full touchdown.
Yeah,
that's garbage. Because before we get into prediction, I want to have a line to go off of. But if it's -7. Gosh, I don't know where it's at. So if it's -7, I'm gonna, before I give like official score predictions, I'm gonna take Texas Tech to cover. I'm gonna take Tech to win this game.
Oh, okay.
Just throw that out there. I don't think anything that Iowa State does offensively scares you. Your defense is pretty good. I think your offense is set up better this year than it has been in the past few years, where their defense has really given you troubles. So I think you've got a better shot. It's going to be another low scoring game like you saw this past weekend against Baylor before it went to overtime. Low, mid-20s probably. I think if you get to 24 points, you probably have a pretty good feeling of winning this game. So the middle of the defense, like in front of the safeties, is going to be where you can pick up some yards. The other thing that you haven't been able to do against this defense previous years is to run the ball very well, because you just didn't have the guys to do it. I think whether it's Armon Shine or Sir Roderick Thompson, like, you've got the guys to keep them honest and, you know, keep them from dropping eight into coverage. Because if they're able to contain your run with three guys and drop eight into coverage, Jet Duffy's going to throw some interceptions.
Yeah.
Every quarterback's going to throw interceptions into eight man coverage, because it's impossible. Like, the 8-on-5 number is not ever going to work in your favor.
Well, and like you said, that we have the tools and the guys that have the ability to keep them honest on that. Our offensive line is playing well enough to get the running game going. I think Tech's still averaging, 4.9 yards per carry. Mm-hmm. It was just right at 5 yards per carry still, even after the Baylor game where it dropped a little bit. Thompson, of course, played excellent that game. 24 or 28 carries? I can't remember, but he had...
He's 28 for 150 something.
Yeah, he really had a great game. And if you get him going or Shine, you're going to be in great shape. Our receiving core has really stepped up. RJ was fantastic last week. I'd love to see him kind of break out some more.
Those outside screens were just... They were working.
They were. And, you know, Vasher caught some amazing passes. Rigdon kind of... He didn't get involved as much this last week, and I think that was because they tried to run those kind of jet sweeps or whatever those were that never really worked out. I mean, that's not his fault. But I'd like to see him get back in the game a little bit. I think Mannix has been kind of off on some catching stuff. And, you know, you've got two tight ends with Thompson and Kuntz who were they're weapons, and they can be used in the middle of the field, and we're finally seeing that these last 2 weeks. I know that Iowa State has a good defense. They have a defensive-minded coach with Campbell. This is going to be another, you know, another Matt matchup.
Matter day, 2 weeks in a row.
Maybe we just say matchup with two T's.
Matchup, nice.
Yeah, that would kind of work out. I'm with you. You know, Iowa State's favored -7. I'm definitely going to take Tech in the points in this. And, I can tell you one other thing. If you wanted to put your money where your mouth was, you could go to MyBookie and put a little money on this game. And regardless whether you've been betting for years or you're ready to play for the first time, MyBookie is your best bet this season.
With pro football, college football, and the MLB playoffs in full swing, hockey around the corner, NBA basketball getting going, now is the time to get off the sidelines and get in on the action. If you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code CHAIR, CHAIR, to activate the offer. That's promo code CHAIR to double your cash.
Yeah, so visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. So if I were to go to mybookie.ag today.
Which is where I'm looking at. And you're right. It was Iowa State -7.
I would put money on the Red Raiders, and I'm with you this week for the first time since the UTEP game. I'm picking Tech to win. I've got Tech winning 31-27. I'm a little more optimistic on Tech's ability to score. I'm doing a lot of math based off of the intangibles. So we talked earlier on in the podcast about how disappointing it was and how the game ended double overtime against Baylor. You felt like it really slipped away from you. Some of it was completely out of your hands. A lot of it wasn't. A lot of it was stuff that you could have executed better or done a better job. Maybe not playing such soft, cushiony prevent defense for that last drive.
Hey, newsflash, prevent defense never actually works.
No, and I kind of get doing it because all they needed to do was get into field goal range. Anyway, okay. All right, I'm just going to ignore that. So my score was 31-27. I think that Tech can score a little bit more on them. I think that Iowa State couldn't struggle this game. And to go back to where I was originally going before I got stuck on prevent defense, the way I see this going is you saw the crowd that showed up for an 11 a.m. game after laying an egg in Norman the week before or 2 weeks before. Imagine the crowd this week. There's going to be a good crowd. It's 11 a.m. game. Who cares? It's a great opponent. It's an opponent you haven't beaten at home in a while. It's homecoming.
It's also an opponent that hasn't lost in October in 3 years.
Well, let's be that team.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. I feel good about this one, which is always a ripe recipe for disappointment and disaster in my world. But I think there's some of those intangibles there. The team's going to be fired up. The coaching staff is going to be fired up because they were so close to having a victory. They were so close to being 4-2 heading into homecoming, and they know it. And there were ways they could have done things differently to have made that happen. So I think with all of that said, and just how the teams are just going to match up, I think Tech walks away 31-27 in a one that's going to be kind of tough to watch. It's going to be one of those where you're just something's going to break one way and then break the other, and you'll just feel like, oh man, a 7-point lead, this is insurmountable.
So I think the game will be about as close as you were saying. I see it being a little lower scoring. I do like that 24-point range. It may be a race to 24, and I may eat these words later and like it'd be an absolute shootout. I don't see it happening that way with these defenses, but I think I've got Texas Tech winning 24-21. That's right in line with about what you did last week against Baylor on the road. I think you're a better home team. Brock Purdy, stats-wise, is a little bit better than Charlie Brewer, but he doesn't have as much around him that Brewer does. So, of course, everything more of the offense was going to go through Purdy than it would go through Brewer. Being that he's pretty much the single dimension of the offense, you may have a better shot at slowing him down to the tune of just the 3 touchdowns on the day. I mean, they're identical in touchdowns and interceptions. They both have 11 touchdowns to 3 interceptions. I do think Purdy probably walks away with conservatively just one more interception to that total.
Yeah.
Because it just feels like if this defense doesn't force an interception, that something went wrong. Because of
it's getting that way. We're kind of like getting spoiled to it.
What Keith Patterson and Coach Wells said when it starts, because it took a while for the turnovers to start the season. When it starts, they're going to come in bunches.
Yeah.
And it's been like an avalanche.
I almost rolled my eyes at that. I thought, really? Is that really how that works?
But then it's come to
fruition. Yeah, for sure. It was the Arizona game was, mm-hmm. I think, when it was Tech.
The first interception.
They broke the seal.
And they've broken the seal on not Khalil Tate, but on the season. They broke the seal on Texas Tech turnovers then. They forced Jalen Hurts' first interception. They forced Charlie Brewer's first interception.
That's right.
They forced Spencer Sanders to throw 3 in a game.
Fumble twice.
They forced Brewer to throw 3 in a game. Just kind of fantastic to average 3 turnovers, Doug, or 3 interceptions.
Yeah, and Doug Coleman, he can read your mind. You just got to be careful.
That man can read your mind.
Man, he's a great athlete. Just and then the plays he makes after he catches it. It's great that we have 6 to compare to, but he makes some great plays after he makes those catches and gets down, mm-hmm. the field.
Now, I did hear this talk, and I was like, well, it's a little early for that. I'm talking about the single season record for interceptions in a year. It's like from 1932. The dude had 11.
Oh my gosh.
It's like Coleman's got a ways to go still get there.
That would really be something.
But 11 interceptions in 1932, like,
this dude must probably have the passes.
Must have been catching everything that went in the air, is my thought. Michael won't be there this weekend for Countdown to Kickoff, but I will be there with Rob Bro, Carson Robinson, and Tucker Lawrence. You can catch us on Talk 1340 2 hours prior to kickoff. So 9 to 11. I will probably have to bounce at about 10. You can listen to us on 1340 AM, streaming online on the website at kkam.com or through the mobile app Talk 1340. Do that on your phone or smart speaker. 2 more bits of football news before we move on.
Yeah, one of them I'm really excited about.
And it's not about the newest football commit.
No, it's about it's about our guy. It's about a Mr. Cliff Kingsbury, who I linked to the wrong game in here. I've got to fix it. They beat the Falcons 34-33 this weekend. The Falcons, of course, were 1-4 at the time. Excuse me. 1-4 at the time. So, you know, it's a really big win. But our guy is still undefeated as an NFL coach in October. Has not lost a game ever in October as an NFL coach.
I wish he was undefeated at Texas Tech in October.
And I'd take November.
More importantly, November.
I would take November. All right. So that was all I had on that.
And then 2021 quarterback recruit out of Eastland, Texas, which is right off of I-20 between here and, is it just before Abilene, I believe?
No, it's east of Abilene. I'm not being funny. It's east of Abilene.
Yeah, it is. It's because it's just past Cisco, and Cisco's, so it's like 2 towns east of Abilene off of I-20. Eastland, Texas quarterback Baron Morton, 4-star recruit, committed to Texas Tech this weekend. Great start to that 2021 recruiting class. Your 2020 recruiting class if you haven't been keeping up with that, is surprisingly full. Despite you did lose a commit this past weekend, defensive end Clinton Anakwuru. I'm probably butchering that name off of memory. He decommitted, but your class has 17 or 18 commits for this upcoming season. It's always good to start your class with a quarterback. They tend to turn around and help recruit the rest of the class for you.
Sure, yeah.
And it's always great to build around a talented guy like Baron Morton.
And I think the decommit, if I read correctly,
is before the game, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, so, you know, let's not dog the guy on anything like something about the game changed his mind or whatever. It was probably completely independent of anything that we would ever know of. So no need to go down that road if anybody was heading there.
All right. Let's talk about basketball for a second.
Yeah.
For just a few seconds. There was an exhibition, charity exhibition game in El Paso. Texas Tech did fall to UTEP 70-60. I don't know if this was I don't even know how to say it. If the fan that said this was saying, what he said was, I bet that Beard didn't even want to win this game, being that it was a charity exhibition game that would support the El Paso shooting victims, the victims right. of the El Paso shooting.
If you know Chris Beard, he wants to win every game.
Which is where I was like, I don't know if I believe that.
Right.
It is an exhibition game, does not count on the 2019-2020 record. We don't have a box score, so we can't tell if like Avery Benson played 38 minutes.
Well, that's what was strange was
he did sub in super early in the game. I saw
he was super early and he almost immediately took a charge.
that's our boy.
Cause I got to listen to part of it while we were preparing for our instant reaction pod.
I wanted nothing to do with sports at that moment.
Oh man. I wanted something to do with a different sport. I was totally, I was all in. I logged onto Twitter and I had the computer out and was okay, well, we're about to get started on instant reaction. I thought, oh man, well, Hacks he's broadcasting this right now. Well, let me listen to that. So I listened to part of it. I think I listened to it a little bit later. I don't think Moretti hit a shot till 9 minutes left in the game, or it was either, I may have my nines backwards, but it was either 9 minutes into the second half or 9 minutes left in the game. So that's just kind of how it went. The only write-ups I could find were from El Paso News. It's completely disappeared off of the Texas Tech website. The schedule no longer has it. There was no write-up for it afterwards. There's a preview for it, but other than that, it's like it never happened. So I wonder if that would have been a little bit different had Tech won. But anyway, Red Raiders shot, this is from the El Paso Times because it's the best I could find. Red Raiders shot 32% from the floor, 28% from three-point range, turned the ball over 15 times as UTEP pulled away down the stretch of a game.
So all those are significantly lower than last season, except for your turnovers were higher. You were shooting in the 40s, mid to upper 40s from the field, mid 30s from three. And I think their line for turnovers, I said, was 10. I think they were saying, like, if you had more than 10 turnovers, like, something was going wrong.
Yeah, well, you know, Beard goes on to say this regarding that UTEP closed the game on a 42-28 run. He said the tougher team pulled away in the second half, and that was UTEP. He said a lot of things were just not our kind of discipline tonight. We had a lot of young players, a lot of new players. That's not an excuse, just the reality of a team trying to play a game after nine practices. And this is what's crazy.
Well, I mean, that number of practices alone is crazy. Like, this team is playing a game
of
having participated in nine practices.
I mean, both teams. That's just single-digit practices. Both teams going at it.
And I was giving a little more benefit of the doubt to Texas Tech because of all the new players, the number of new faces on the team, being they've only been together for nine practices. I don't know about the returning talent for UTEP, but you were saying something, Michael?
Well, just I wanted to point this out. Tech's defense, they say that Tech's defense overwhelmed UTEP for almost 30 minutes as it forced the Miners into 21 turnovers before the midpoint of the second half, but forced only one the rest of the way. So Tech was leading 35-28 until Darrell Edwards exploded for 24 points in 28 minutes in his minor debut. So it was still, I mean, it was a good game. I really wish we would have been able to watch it, or if I could have just sat there and listened to it the whole time. But I really have no idea how everything went. It does say that Kyler Edwards led Tech with 13 points and Jamias Ramsey had 12.
Yeah.
But there's really not a lot of stats floating around out there. And I dug around. I tried to find some to share with you guys. But apparently it was hard to do. Now, the stat broadcast that was on that you could have loaded up while you're listening to the game was excellent. You know, it had all the stats you could want. And if I'd have known how difficult it was going to be to find them, I would have screenshotted some of that stuff.
Isn't that evening still there?
I can't find, like I said, the game link disappeared. Everything disappeared. So we can look for it at some point. Anyway, I don't think this is anything for Tech to worry about. I think it was a competitive, fun game that I hope benefited as many people as possible. And I'm also not dismissing the fact that UTEP played really well, and they have found a really good score with Darrell Edwards. Who knows? He may take that 24 points he made in those 28 minutes and build that off for the rest of the year and help UTEP succeed. So let's not take anything away from them and just point out the fact that I think Beard's still trying to figure out his roster, and it was a game in October that was sounded like it was super exciting and super fun, and I wish I could have watched it despite the outcome.
I did find a stat sheet.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I sent it to you. Okay. Kyler Edwards had 13 points. You said that Jamias Ramsey had 12. TJ Holyfield had 4. Davide Moretti had 8. Chris Clark had 9. Clarence Nadolny had 2. Andre Savrasov had 7. Avery Brinson 1. Russell Chewa 4.
So Avery Benson played 17 minutes. Man, this is great. I wish I'd have found this.
Davide Moretti and Jamias Ramsey both had 34 minutes. Kyler Edwards played 37. He never came out.
Yeah. See,
well, that's facetious. Hyperbolic. He came out for 3 minutes.
Yeah. Davide Moretti kind of goes back to what I think I heard correctly was he was 1 for 5 from the field.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
You were 4 from 15 from 3 in the first half. So your shooting percentage was 30%. You shot a lot better in the second half. You took fewer shots, though. You were 1 for 4 from 3. 15 to 24 from the free throw line. So you got to the line a bunch in the second half.
Yeah.
Only finished the game at 66% from the free throw line.
Chris Clark played 28 minutes, which I like to see. I think he might be my new guy.
No, he's mine.
Oh, man, you claimed him?
Okay. Well, no. He and Jamias Ramsey, I think, are guys I'm looking forward to being big factors in this year's team. They play a lot of minutes and really physical brand of basketball,
yes,
that I'm looking forward to.
Up and down the court, rebounding,
and they're everything. Long individuals.
So, yeah, how fun. That was so cool that Tech got to play basketball early. We got to see, well, we got to read and learn a little bit about it later. And then I think their first game is the first week of November.
It's like middle of November. And I can't remember who said it, but they were like, it was a national media type that covers college basketball. It's like, as a Texas Tech fan, you hope come March, they're not going to be a bubble team because their non-conference schedule is trash.
It's rough. But they do play Louisville. They do play Kentucky.
Sure, but everything else is like...
But about everything else is pretty
Sacred
rough.
Heart.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
St. Mary's School for the Blind.
That's hard to argue, really. But yeah, the first game of the year, and I think it's actually... I don't think this is an exhibition. I think it's an actual game. Eastern Illinois, November 5th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bethune-Cookman, Houston Baptist, Tennessee State, Long Island, Iowa. And then that's part of the Las Vegas tournament. So you've got Iowa, and then you play San Diego State or Creighton. So kind of decent there, decent competition. DePaul, Louisville, Southern Mississippi, UTRGV, CSU Bakersfield. And then, yeah, eventually you're the Big 12 SEC Challenge on January 25th is Kentucky. So you're right. Just kind of have to depend on the Big 12 being a good league again this year, which it will. Should be.
It will be.
I mean, Oklahoma State's going to be better. They've got to be.
Baylor's going to be better.
But, yeah, I think Oklahoma State's going to be better too, and probably TCU. You're going to have some
good competition. Oklahoma's always been solid under Lon Kruger.
Sure. Yeah. Anyways. Iowa State's all, you know, they've been tough for several years. West Virginia, they'll figure that out too. They beat this team last year in the Big 12 tournament, so.
All right, let's get to your questions.
Yes, let's do it.
Now, are these really the questions that I was called here to answer?
Who's in the box? Oh, what's in the box?
I'm Ron Burgundy?
Damn it, who typed a question mark on the teleprompter?
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
All right. So before we jump into Twitter, got a couple here in the notes document. Cooper Burnett sure looks like a hashtag hammer that under type of week to me. Also, which do y'all think is the bigger key determining factor? Turnover battle or red zone efficiency? Michael, you found some stats here.
Yes.
Let's talk about both of these measures here. Turnover battle. Texas Tech is tied for 16th in turnover margin on the year at +4. Iowa State tied 61st at even or at zero.
Right. And I think I read Seth today say something about how they've forced 7 fumbles, but I don't know if they've recovered any of them.
Reminds me of that TCU game a few years ago.
It does.
Where you did force like 5 fumbles and only recovered 1.
Yeah, Iowa State's they've committed 8 turnovers and they've gathered 8 turnovers. So they're pretty even there. And then to counter that, as far as kind of trying to figure out which is the bigger key or determining factor, TTU is 38th in the country in red zone offense, which surprised me, 24 for 27. They've only gotten to the red zone 3 times this year and not scored.
And 2 of them were this past weekend.
Right. And one of them was that fake field goal in Arizona. That's got to be it, right? Those are the 3.
Yep. It was the fake field goal in Arizona. And then we had the interception and a fumble.
And then
so they're both
one of the ones this week felt like it was a red zone, but the ball was on the 21. The interception was on the 21-yard line.
You're right. It was a...
So it felt like there were 3.
Yeah.
There was one of them you just went for it on 4th down. Gosh, I can't remember the 3rd one from this week or the 2nd one. Anyway, Iowa State, on the other hand, is 5th in the country in red zone offense, 27 out of 28. There's only been 1 trip to the red zone that they have not scored in some form or fashion. Now, I didn't break it down. You know, they did have it broken down, whether it was a passing or rushing touchdown or a field goal or whatever. But I kind of think, man, bigger key or determining factor. I could say I think
whatever keeping, you're going to say, I'm going to say the opposite.
Okay,
so
I'm going to say keeping Iowa State out of the red zone as best you can. I think that's the bigger key or the you know, out of these 2 options.
Sure.
Because if they're almost automatic in the red zone, no matter whether just it's field goal,
there.
Yeah, just and that's what Tech did so well against Oklahoma State, I think. Because Oklahoma State they were 4 for 5 once they got in there, but they just didn't get in there very much.
And I'm going to say, you just limit their number of possessions, the opportunities they have to get to the red zone. Force them some turnovers. You stay positive in the turnover margin. Let's say it that way, because if you force turnovers, but Duffy is and the offense are turning the ball over as often or more often than Iowa State is, it's not helping you too much.
Right.
But no, I was going to pick the turnover margin anyways. And I think it's because they're so good in the red zone and you're saying, well, don't let them get there. My don't let them get there is just take the ball from them.
Just take their ball and go home.
Yeah. On the over under. Yeah. I adjusted my point total from the earlier, when I had it in the document. I'm down to, is that 45 points?
Yeah.
On the over under. I didn't see an over under on the sheet yet.
It's 56 is what I've seen.
56. Yeah. So I was going to, that's 11 under. That's a pretty big under.
Yeah. I mean, that does go with Cooper's idea of hashtag hammer the under. I, on the other hand, Cooper, am just barely on the over. I think I've got 58 total points in my score. So now I'm really questioning it, but I'm going to stick with it. I've already decided with it, but yeah, the hammer, the under, that does not sound like a bad idea this week at all to me.
So Tyler Timmons is up next. I'm not exactly sure what he means by the first part of this question. He asks, how do we feel about Tech getting 6 points
spread? I think it ended up at 7, Tyler. That's what we're seeing right now anyway.
Okay. That makes sense.
But that's, I'm pretty sure that's what he means.
That feels, again, based on what we've said so far, feels like a lot because we've both picked Texas Tech to win this game. A close game for sure, but 6 points, 7 now feels like a lot.
Yeah, I'm with you. Even if I hadn't picked Tech to win, I would have picked Tech to cover.
Sorry, I got back on Twitter and I was distracted by another Baylor fan thinking they would have won the game in regulation.
Get off that sauce, man. Get off that Twitter sauce.
I gotta my Twitter mentions, because I engaged
in Minchies.
David Smoke today. Just a cesspool. Like this gif, my goodness.
Oh yeah. The baby. It's the horrific. Weird baby looking thing. Yeah.
I'm wading through this to get to some of our questions.
Well, the second half of Tyler's question was, what's your expectations for the crowd on Saturday? And I kind of went into that a little bit. I'm really optimistic thinking that, well, let me look up the weather one, but, you know, the 11 a.m. game against Oklahoma State, a lot of people really worried about that, especially after the performance in Norman, but there really was a good crowd there. They stayed for the most part. They apparently thought that Tech had it wrapped up at 45-21, where us olds knew better.
It's too hot.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was hot, but you know, Saturday here in Lubbock, you got a high of 77, low of 53. It's going to be sunny all day, 0% chance. I mean, it should be a perfect day for it. And yeah, I know that 77 is going to feel like 87 or 90, depending on where you are down there.
It's still going to feel pretty warm in the sun.
Yeah. I'm not ignoring that, but man, I just think it's going to be an even better day for football than when Oklahoma State came to town. And I just expect a good crowd. Don't let me down, Tech fans. I'll be out of town this week. Sorry.
I would expect a good crowd a few minutes into the first quarter until about halftime. And I don't know what's going to change that. But I'm going to go back to my season long meme here. Just prove me wrong.
We need to get Taco Casa involved. That might get some butts back in seats. Get some free tacos, some super burritos.
Super burritos. Okay, Red Reset Man asks an interesting question. I'm not really sure, like, because if we answer this, we're going to be a bad guy.
Yeah, I know. I thought this too.
What game does the Tech collapse happen? Every year we have one game we absolutely crap the bed. I'm hoping it's not Iowa State because they seem to have our number the last couple of years.
I've got a way around it. I've got a way around answering it, and then I also have a way of answering it. I'm hoping it was in Norman. I'm hoping that was it. Despite the fact that OU is, you know, a college playoff team unless they crap the bed against somebody. But I'm hoping that's it. But then if I really have to answer this question, things could get weird in Morgantown.
Yep.
That's where I would go with that. If there's going to be a game where Tech comes out and they're off and they're just not, things aren't clicking, and I could see it happening there. If I have to pick one, that's the one I'd pick.
Two options for me. It's either this weekend against Iowa State.
I am scarily confident this weekend It's going to hurt if it doesn't turn out.
Well, and here's the thing. I'm looking at the rest of the schedule. I'm like, which of the games on the schedule should you feel pretty confident in winning, but would still be fairly upset about losing? And I'm like, well, Iowa State, TCU, Kansas State, West Virginia, like any of those four, I could see it happening because there's enough talent there that they could reach up and bite you. You've not played very well against any of those teams. Of those four, you only beat TCU recently. So it could be any of those, and I don't really have a good feeling on it being any one of those. I'm with you. I'm hoping we got that kind of out of our system a couple weeks ago in Norman.
Sure, like, yeah.
If we're going to have a bad day, let's have it against the team we're probably going to get blown out by anyways.
Let's have it against the number four team in the country.
I'm also kind of being a little hopeful and optimistic that David Yost can figure out this defense better than Cliff Kingsbury could, which saying that out loud makes me sound a little too optimistic because of how well we thought of Cliff Kingsbury as an offensive coordinator. And he could never seem to figure out this defense. He was 0-3 against Matt Campbell. So we'll see.
We'll see. We got any other questions pop up through there?
Sorry, I got distracted by reading and then trying to load ESPN because the app isn't loading for me.
Why don't they do things the way we want them to do them?
I don't know. Gosh, there's so many Baylor people in my mentions right now.
See, that's why you get out.
That's enough. Real quick, let's do a going yard update.
Okay, what do you got?
So I overseeded a few weeks ago our off week, the Texas Tech off week. The week before we played Oklahoma, I got the first mow on it since then. So it had gone 3 weeks without a mow, waiting for the seed to germinate and grow back in. That's all looking really well. It's working really well. The grass is green. It's even. When I had to cut it real short, it got a little iffy there. Because I had to leave it for 3 weeks. It looks good though. So cool season yards. You know that you should probably be overseeding. Anybody else, if you did oversee and it's been long enough where you could mow it a couple of times, or those with warm season grass like Bermuda, it's time to put down your fall pre-emergence.
Okay. So
your pre-emergent will keep any of the winter or early spring weeds from popping up. So if you put it down now, you won't get a lot of weeds in the spring. Because once you get to the spring, it's going to be too late for that. You put a pre-emergent down in the spring, it'll cover you throughout the spring, summer, end of the fall. So
pre-emergent now.
Pre-emergent now.
Okay.
And just follow the directions. Whatever one you pick up, whether it's prodiamine, dithiapir. And if you...
Diphtheria?
Dithiapir. Anyways...
Is that Mike Tyson doing magic?
No, it's not. Some of those have like max yearly rates to put down. So just be careful. Like if you've done some of this before, make sure you're keeping track of that. Especially if you have a lawn service.
Oh yeah, you wouldn't want to do some of that stuff twice.
No, because
or thrice or whatever the limit is.
They have like yearly limits that you need to be paying attention to. All right, that's what I've got. For going yard, pay attention to the instructions on the bag
of your diphtheria bag.
Dithiapir or dithiapir, depending on how you want to pronounce it.
You can make this rabbit dithiapir.
Oh, my dear. Okay. And because I can't work my computer, and it's been weird tonight, we're gonna do our... What did we learn?
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either.
All right, Michael, what did we learn?
I learned that judging barbecue is hard work.
Okay, so on the way over here, I was thinking about when I got mad on the pregame show.
Yeah, you banged the table.
I couldn't remember what it was. I was like, was it about a game? No, it was about this. As soon as you started talking about it, I was like, dang it, we're talking about...
He's fired back up again. He was like...
barbecue.
He's like that guy in Anchorman where just hammering who typed the question in the teleprompter and just
bang,
banging on the table. Sorry, Rob, bro. Sorry, Carson. Hopefully there's not a big dent. But anyway.
Sorry, listeners. I had to deal with that on the radio or their phones.
Through a connection, I was able to acquire passage through the behind the steel curtain to get to judge some barbecue at the Hub City Barbecue cook-off this past Thursday. It was a blast. It was so fun. I ate so much food. It was one of those things you don't realize how much you were eating. And I was really trying not to overdo it. But the desserts were last. And so I thought, well, I've done so well all day, I'm going to have too much dessert. And turns out I probably ate way more brisket than I should have, too. So anyway.
He's just rubbing it in, guys. Just rubbing it in.
It was a lot of fun. I came home and immediately laid down for like an hour. Because I was worried.
Because it was hard work was hard eating work. Barbecue.
No, I was worried I'd eaten too much barbecue. But they had a category that was the quote mystery meat, and so this is the thing I wanted to share. And if y'all listen to the countdown, sorry, you got to hear it there too. But the mystery meat this year was bacon, and apparently they reveal it, you know, a night before or something. So everybody was. They made whatever they wanted to with bacon, and that was one of the categories. And just for disclosure, the other categories were Bloody Marys, beans, pork ribs, brisket, and dessert. So this mystery meat category was bacon, and the main thing I wanted to talk about was funnel cake bacon, which was a thing that I had, which I still think about. Almost a week later, I've thought about it at least once or twice every day. It's just lightly battered in what had to have been funnel cake batter, fried, and then sprinkled with powdered sugar. Magnificent. I have no idea if it won or not, because that was the strange thing about it is, especially in that category, you would kind of need to list what you had made. Because when the winners came out in the newspaper the next day, it was just, well, this team won the mystery meat category, but you didn't know what they made. So I would be very disappointed to find out that the funnel cake, as I called it, didn't make the top three. But who knows? Maybe they didn't make it. They might have been something better.
So I know as an attendee of the event, we were walking around looking for tags and trophies of teams that had won. Turns out showing up between 6 and 6:30 was too late.
Oh no.
Most everything was gone by the time we got there, an hour into the event, which doesn't make any sense. The event was really well attended. I will say that, like, there were a ton of people when we got there.
Yeah. Even cause I left a little after 3, and that was on a Thursday, you know, it's during a work day. I took a day off of work to do this.
I don't want to hear it, man. But
there, it's not like there was a ton of people there, but there were a lot of, I mean, most people there were probably cooking or doing something, but there were a lot of people roaming around. It was a good crowd. It felt like there were, you know, if you would have gone there at 3 to go around and sample some barbecue, you wouldn't have felt like you were the only person doing that.
Yeah. Ed, sounds fantastic. And you complaining about it is just making everything worse.
I don't remember complaining about it.
You were just talking about how hard it was. You had to come home and rest.
Oh, I'm just
such a.
It's more like tips. Tips for those of you who get into a barbecue judging position someday. You just really got to pace yourself, and carve out some recuperation time.
That's ridiculous. That's what that is. All right. Anything else you want to leave us on? You want to.
I will say that brisket was an adventure. Odds are, if you're listening to this, you could probably have entered your brisket into this contest, and I would have enjoyed it just as much, if not more, than several of the samples I had.
Yeah, there were a couple of slices that I had that were like, wow, this is what you entered.
Yeah, that's a thing. That's a thing you make.
Yeah.
That's something.
All right. That'll do it this week for us on the 23 Personal Podcast. Be sure to check back in. At some point, we'll have a post-game reaction. You can listen to our pre-game countdown to kickoff show with Rob Bro, Carson Robinson, Tucker Lawrence on Talk 1340. For Michael, I'm Spencer. We will see you next time.